intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, The Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind, does the world seem inverted? Backward, dissonant, dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Giuseppe. And welcome everyone to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 25th day of March. Only 9 more shopping months till Christmas. And, we are here today to kind of look into some unusual circumstances. And I am joined as usual by my good friend out there in Arizona. Cal Robbins. Cal, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Mike. It's looks like spring is really starting to spring around here. And
spring has sprung?
Spring has sprung. We actually hit it into the 90s yesterday and spent the day down at the lake yesterday. It was beautiful and wonderful.
Shut up. I don't want to hear about it.
It's nice to take a break from the madness going on in the world and just get out there and let the peacefulness of the water soothe the soul.
All right. Well, you know, one of the things we had talked about a couple of subjects for today's program, but, I was, a couple of things have motivated me. One was a quote that I think you and I both saw, and that was a quote by Isaac Asimov. And I think it certainly pertains to our discussion today, and I will go into that quote. And the quote is, there is a cult of ignorance in the United States, and there always has been. The strain of intellectualism has been a constant thread winding through our political and cultural life, nurtured by the false notion that democracy means that my ignorance is just as good as your knowledge, unquote. So what would you say to that, Cal?
I would say that Isaac Asimov was spot on. It's people's ignorance. They think their ignorance is just as good as knowledge. And if you present stuff to them to help them not to be ignorant, present truths to them counter to what they think, They usually just deny it or ignore it or try to refute it. It's just crazy.
How many times have you and I both encountered people that we will provide them original source documents and they believe that what they heard on Fox News or what they was taught in school is superior to the actual facts?
Well, that would be most of the time.
Well, that is true.
It is great. It is frustrating. It is absolutely frustrating to be, you know, to have the truth and the knowledge in your hand and then to share it with others and for it to be just completely rejected for what is obviously a falsehood.
Well, go ahead.
And that would explain why everything's so crazy and in such a mess, you know, that things are in, is because everybody's living in a false reality, or the majority seems to be.
Well,
and you try to point the truth to them and it's ignored, and they're dragging everyone else off the cliff with them. And it's maddening at times.
Well, it takes me back to the quote of Marcus Tullius Cicero, and he says that a people who are ignorant of their own history will be forever children. Do we see adults acting as children in today's world, Cal?
Oh, completely. I mean, I can't even stomach watching the news because it's presented on such a level. It's such a dumbing down effect. And the frustrating part is the higher principles of liberty, or, you know, where freedom come from is from liberty, require a more higher, a thought process higher than grade school or junior high. You've just got to have a higher mental cognivity to you. Otherwise, you're going to be controlled and ruled by others, just like kids are. And that's probably why they do it. It's designed like that on purpose to keep people in a state of mental concrete to where they feel they need to be controlled by others. So, you know, I mean, as a kid, you know, you looked up to your parents or your teachers or whatever you were taught to. And that's the state they want to keep adults in now, so that, you know, they lean on other people to control them and tell them what to think and how to act and what mask to wear and when to wear it and what to think about Ukraine and everything. And it's just, it's maddening to me.
Well, Cal, you are certainly tied in with my teaching platform called Teach Me. And we have looked into this, and I have made the posit that I believe that very possibly that Karl Marx got his inspiration for socialism from the American Constitution and the process involving the American Constitution. Would you find fault with that posit?
No, I've come to the same conclusion on my own, separate from yours, and I concur with that. I didn't come to that conclusion from your suggestion. I had already come to that conclusion on my own before you posited it. So, you know, if that says anything.
Well, you know, this week I kind of got triggered in a conversation that you and I had with several other folks, and that was something that was posted by, and I try to stay away from names, but America's premier female constitutional attorney, who posted the following, that the Constitution is the foundation and standard for a limited and defined government. And then, you know, she added, and then we're going to get into the crux of the whole deal. Then she added, only people who hate liberty and freedom disagree with me.
Oh, man, that's so much ignorance and so much, I don't know, leftist Marxism. If you disagree with me, I'm going to silence you.
So,
what she's saying.
Exactly. So let's go back. You know, we've talked about American history, Cal. I think there is probably no finer example than the Sedition Act of 1789. I mean, 1798. I'm sorry. I messed it up, transversed the dates there, interposed. But 1798, the Sedition Act, and one of the things that struck me about this was the ruling of what happened in the trial of Joseph Callender, C-A-L-L-E-N-D-A-R. And he was charged with sedition. And he was at his trial, the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Chase presided at his trial. And at that trial, now folks, this is within 10 years of our government beginning under the Constitution. And the Sedition Act said that you can't say anything negative about the government. It's just not allowed. You can't say anything negative about us. In other words, if you say anything about us that is negative, it will be called hate speech. They just hadn't picked up on the hate speech yet, but that's what they were saying. Now, Samuel Chase, in charging the jury at Callender's trial, stated the following. It makes no difference whether what Mr. Callender said was true or not. The crime is in the fact that he said it. Unquote. So, very early on in American history, a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court defined the truth as hate speech. You hate the government, therefore you're going to prison. And Mr. Callender was found guilty and went to prison. During that trial, Mr. Callender's attorney walked out in disgust because of the judge, Samuel Chase. He walked out in complete disgust. And Callender was found guilty and sentenced to prison for making a true statement about the government. So, Cal, would that be an inspiration for Karl Marx and cultural Marxism?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, it's a form of censorship. I mean, one of those, excuse me, one of the principles, you know, if people talk of freedom of speech, I would prefer to, you know, to view it as liberty of expression, which is, you know, somewhat similar, but has more responsibility to it. But yeah, I mean, you know, everybody talks about freedom of speech as they go around trying to silence others and use the powers of government to do so. Or trying to silence others instead of letting others speak their mind. Instead of, you know, debating them on merits, they try to silence the dissent.
Oh.
And human go advancement ahead, comes from dissent. I'm sorry, the revolution was from dissent, from the king. I mean, the advancements in mankind has come from dissent against the controlling powers at that time. So.
Well,
no wonder the controlling people don't want any dissent and try to silence the individual or silence those voices. That's why.
Well, Cal, I would like your comments on the following. Now, let me, pardon me, let me kind of get into this. Freedom of speech is not the guardian of taste. Instead, freedom of speech protects freedom of thought and expression, even if generated and defined by hatred, as long as that expression does not produce immediate violence. We all have the right to hate and the right to express our hatred. We have the right to offend other people and to disagree with other people. Without that principle, we are left with our thoughts and our minds being controlled, and we are punished for the thought that it might hate and that it might be hate and it might cause fear in others. Hate or hatred is an emotion of intense revulsion, distaste, enmity, or antipathy for a person, thing, or phenomenon. A desire to avoid, restrict, remove, or destroy its object. The emotion is often stigmatized, yet it serves an important purpose, as does love. Just as love signals attachment, hatred signals detachment. Now, it pays us to remember the old childhood saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. If there is a protection for free speech, and it has any meaning at all, then it must protect speech that some find offensive, disrespectful, or hateful. Speech everybody agrees with doesn't need any protection. The notion that listeners or readers have the right to be protected from wrong opinions is an absolute insult to the listener or the reader. Unless a listener is a psychological cripple in search of a guru, the listener or reader can decide for themselves whether they agree or disagree with the speaker's presentation. Thomas Jefferson said that to ensure the right to speak our own conscience, we must always protect the right of others to speak their conscience. So if you deny me the right to speak, calling it hate speech, you also say that your speech must be restricted if it offends anyone. There is absolutely no point in listening to only the people you agree with. You will learn absolutely nothing in that pursuit. We should always be willing to challenge our own assumptions and beliefs because none of us have all of the answers to all of the questions. None of us know everything there is to know about any subject. If anyone can show me new facts or point out errors in my reasoning, I'm open to change. But if the person can't, or I can't, then my different opinions roll off me like rain on a tin roof. I freely admit that sensitivity has never, ever been my strong suit. I really don't give a damn how you feel about anything I say. I try to present the truth as best I can and the best I can determine it by original source documentation. And how the people react to that is their business, not mine. I'm strongly opposed to any limits against so-called hate speech. Bigots must also receive shelter under the idea of free speech. There is no such thing as a free society in which anyone, government or individuals, can control what people think and say and punish those with whom they decide to disagree. Freedom is fragile. It is in peril every single day, especially now. And therefore, it must be defended by those who cherish it, even if it means defending the rights of people we think might be bigots, haters, or fanatics. Freedom, like virginity, is either intact or it doesn't exist. Your thoughts, Cal?
There's button. I totally concur with that. That's pretty much how I feel about all of it. I don't try to silence anyone else. I don't like seeing people silenced. I don't like seeing people I disagree with being deplatformed, so to speak, because that is an attack upon that person's rights. That's an attack upon their liberty of expression. And their liberty expression and my liberty expression are equal rights. So they're entitled to their opinions and expression of them just as I'm entitled to mine and my expression of them. And I don't see how people don't understand that. Unless they're living in a world to where they cannot, it's like they don't have an argument to defeat the truth. So they have to silence the truth. Would that be an accurate description?
Well, absolutely, Cal. And if we live in a country where the truth is hate speech, then we are doomed. Now, you may not, like I said before, you may not agree with what I say. Well, please bring forth your facts to prove I'm wrong. Don't try to silence me with your bullshit called hate speech.
And you're watching the so-called right embrace this ideal more and more and more.
Oh, absolutely.
They're just becoming, you know, they're just 5 years behind their, you know, their progressive brethren on the left. They're just 5 years behind them.
Well, Cal, look at who's using that hate speech now. We talked about our constitutional attorney who wouldn't know the true meaning of the Constitution if it hit her in the ass. But she is making money traveling around the country giving people false hope. At one period in American history, these people were called, what were they, snake oil salesmen. Or they were called charlatans. But you sell a product which is not true, promising things it cannot produce. But they make good money doing this, so they just keep doing it. And the greatest danger of exposure to them is the truth. So then if someone comes up with the truth, how can I immediately label them as a problem? Well, by God, it's hate speech. You know, are we going to label in the future? Are we going to say forever that hate speech or truth is hate speech? Then the truth will be relegated to the waste bin of history, and all we will have are lies, comfortable lies that people are willing to believe. And the people who challenge them, let's look in history, Patrick Henry. Patrick Henry's speech would have been labeled hate speech by so many people.
It was labeled treason.
Yes, it was labeled treason at the time. He was called a traitor at the time because he stood for freedom and liberty. Well, I guess by God, Cal, we're going to have to suffer the same thing. And if you can tell me that I have to suffer because I believe in the principles of Patrick Henry, I'll gladly accept it, brother.
I'm right there with you.
So, you know, we look at so many things, Cal, and there is a, you know, let's look at the regimes. Let's look at the regimes that have absolutely stood on hate speech. Oh, Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong. What great examples of people who promoted hate speech. And as I mentioned earlier, I think it was in the British Parliament. Don't let me make that an absolute statement. But recently, there was a lady of Indian descent, and I'm not talking about American Indian, who was a member of Parliament, an MP, who made the statement, a statement that contained the phrase cultural Marxism. Well, she was immediately attacked as being anti-Semitic. Now, where in the hell does cultural Marxism throw any reference that would be considered anti-Semitic, Cal?
Well, to the narrative, to understand what Marxism is, most people don't understand the relationship of what people call Semitism, which is actually, they don't even understand that word. But if you look at that, what does that tell you about Marxism and its relationship with what people consider Semitism? Something people haven't really related to each other yet. Well, some people have, but when you do that, then you're labeled as a hate speaker.
Well, you know, Cal, let's look at a couple of comments. You know, you've probably heard of Arthur Schlesinger Jr., hadn't you? He was a historian and a special assistant to JFK.
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, we probably need to read you up on Arthur Schlesinger. But he made a statement. He said, obviously, political correctness is a strategy of intimidation in the struggle for intellectual and educational power. Oh, political correctness. No hate speech, people. That's, we got to be politically correct here. No hate speech. And then let's look at another one. A former Marxist himself, a gentleman by the name of Ronald Radosh, R-A-D-O-S-H, who was also a historian, made this comment. Now, he should know. He was a Marxist. He said, for many members of the former Marxist left, the death of communism has been replaced equally fervently with the advocacy of the new political correctness. So now we have Marxism moving with a different name, and it's called being politically correct. And damn you if you say anything that they don't agree with, because then it becomes hate speech. So, you know, despite the awful human toll of Stalin and Mao Zedong, the millions they killed of their own people in their communist regimes, many contemporary people, both of the left and the right in America, as you said, Cal, the right's beginning to adopt these steps, and I want to take that back to the Clinton administration in a minute. They advocate the very speech controls which were characteristic of Stalin and Mao. Current efforts to regulate speech are reminiscent of the speech controls instituted within Soviet and Maoist regimes. The ideological origins of hate speech regulation from totalitarian communist rule directly through to current speech regulation proposals. So the people who stand out there today, like this wonderful constitutional attorney who makes a lot of money parading around with a mask on that says, "Got liberty," these people are Marxist. They are pushing the theory of Marxism forward. But they're doing it under the heading of hate speech. You can't say anything we disagree with, because if you do, it's hate speech. We're not going to take the problem. We're not going to take the initiative and show that what you're saying is incorrect. When they say what you are saying is hate speech, they are saying we can't prove you wrong, so we have to demonize you. Cal?
You just shared an example of the Sedition Act. This was before Marxism. So, and it's going on today. Look at Julian Assange. What price is he paying? He's an Australian and he's being charged with treason to the United States. How does that work? And people embrace it. I mean, you know, Trump could have pardoned him. Never did. If Trump was all about, you know, liberty or freedom, wouldn't somebody who told the truth, which is what Assange did, be pardoned for that? Or would he continually be punished and held up as an example to silence others?
Well, I'm sure it was hate speech.
You know, well, it's called treason, called Patrick Henry.
Exactly. So speech regulations and restrictions on free inquiry are totally characteristic of totalitarian communist regimes. So we, all of these people who are out there screaming for limitations on what we can say, if you don't have the freedom to offend people, you don't have any freedom. People who are offended just don't have to listen anymore. I did a program last week on, the letter from Robert L. Dabney to Oliver O. Howard about slavery. And it's a very, very long letter. And some commentators said on the program said, well, that is what got to be the longest, most boring speech I have ever heard in my life. And I said, well, don't listen, damn it. Anybody holding a gun to your head? But I think the critical thing here is the fact that the people who will tell you that what you're saying or what you're doing is hate speech are being critical to the listener. They are telling the listener, you aren't smart enough to figure this out, so I'm going to help you here. The great constitutional attorney is telling her listening audience, look, you aren't smart enough to figure out whether the lies I'm telling you are true or whether the actual factual history is true. So I'm going to call it hate speech because you're too damn dumb to figure it out for yourself. So I'm helping you out here.
Well, that's, I think most of that's generated by three people, me being one of them, who've been posting truth on her threads.
Yeah,
who started swaying a little bit some of her beloved following, and so I know who she was talking to when she said that.
Well, now, come on, Cal. You can't be hating liberty and freedom, buddy, because if you disagree with that wonderful bitch, you're hating liberty. What's the matter with you?
I mean, you know, in my studies, I have only one sacred cow. I have no sacred cows other than the rightful liberty, the equal rightful liberty of all people. I mean, there are no other sacred cows, no country, no constitution. The only ideology that is my sacred cow is rightful liberty. And in pursuit of that, I would slay any sacred cow to get to it. And that's just, you know, and the truth is part of liberty. You cannot have rightful liberty without truth. It's impossible. And so you have to follow the truth no matter where it takes you. And so, my political views and my views have changed so much by being able to do that. Because that's the one thing that, you know, man's creator endowed to all mankind. That's the one thing that all mankind have alike. Even though we all have different thoughts, different skin tones, different nationalities, so to speak. But everyone has the same rightful liberty. And so that's why that's my sacred cow. And that's why in following the truth, a lot of my former sacred cows have been slaughtered.
Well, you know, I look at so much of this, Cal, and I look at it now. And what are these people saying? If you're saying it to a group of people who listen to your radio platform, or if you say it to people who are reading your Facebook post or attend your classes, which they pay dearly for, are you telling them, look, you aren't smart enough to figure out stuff on your own, so I'm going to classify the stuff you don't need to hear as hate speech so you don't have to listen. So you will know right away when I tell you you're too damn dumb to understand this because I'm filtering it for you. Wasn't it Hillary Clinton in the 1990s who said that the government should act as a gatekeeper for the internet?
Yeah, they're still trying to do that. And
yes,
they are doing that.
Yes, we must have gatekeepers out there to filter out the stuff that you don't need to hear because you're so damn dumb you couldn't understand it anyway. Now, people...
I find that offensive to me.
Oh, many times.
For somebody to say that I don't have the intellectual ability to think for myself, you know? I mean, I'm not a follower of Whoopi Goldberg or The Five or whatever. I hardly ever follow it. But I saw that she got kicked off of it or something like that, and... I even though I don't watch her, follow her, listen to her, I find that offensive because she has the right to say what she wants to say. She has a huge platform from which to say it, which holds a lot of influence on people. And, you know, even though I don't agree with it, I would not want to silence it because people should be able to decide for themselves. Of course, people are intellectually crippled, as you stated before.
Well, that is true, but one of the things, and I looked at this, Cal, I spent a lot of time researching for this, and searches, one who starts looking, like myself, will search in vain to find an American historical precedent for hate speech regulation. Now, Justice Jackson, who presided at the Nuremberg trials, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, he made a concise assertion and expressed the time-honored American distrust of any enforced limitations on what you can hear. when he said, and I quote, "No official, high or petty, can describe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, or forces the citizens to confess by word or action their faith therein." The American legal tradition poignantly contrasts the free society with totalitarian regimes, as was indicated by Justice Stewart. And his comment was, "Censorship reflects a society's lack of confidence in itself. It is the hallmark of an authoritarian regime, as was the case with many of the constitutional protections, including in our founding documents. Bitter experience under abusive central government authority shaped the founders' beliefs about free speech." Now, I might have a thing to do with that or two, because most of the founders in Pennsylvania didn't want anyone to hear what they had to say. That's why they censored it for 50 years. So I find that quite a bit contradictory. But if one takes the American constitutional tradition, one finds constant warnings against totalitarian tendencies. Criticizing Parliament in 1774, Thomas Jefferson said, and I quote, "History has informed us that bodies of men, as well as individuals, are susceptible of the spirit of tyranny." Such warnings are especially prominent in American jurisprudence for two reasons. First and fundamentally, the nation itself was founded upon opposition to an overbearing centralized government authority. Well, the nation might have been, but the Constitution changed that. Second, the encounter with totalitarian ideologies throughout the 20th century further impressed upon many American jurists the wisdom of strictly circumscribing government authority in matters of speech and doctrine. So, you know, allegedly, especially if you listen to the Anti-Federalist Cal, they were totally against this thing of limiting the ability of someone to speak. Because, again, if you do not have the ability to say something that offends people, you are not free. Now, I don't really give a damn who gets offended. Change the channel, damn it. Listen to somebody else. But if I am making a statement that you can prove is false, offer your evidence. Don't hit me with an attack of, "Oh, you got to be saying that hurt somebody's feelings." Again, what do feelings have to do with liberty, which we are losing rapidly on a daily basis in this country? And the thing that bothers me is, just like Cal mentioned in the beginning, is Robert L. Dabney described the American conservative way back when, 150 years ago, when he said the American conservative is just another liberal only 5 years removed. Because 5 years after a liberal presents something, the conservatives will be proposing and endorsing the same damn thing. Now, we go back to the Clinton administration, which I promised I would mention before. And during the Clinton administration, if anybody came up with anything critical of the Clinton administration, they were immediately hit by a barrage of ad hominem attacks. Now, no one has adopted that principle better than Americans' conservative right. If you say something we don't like, it's got to be hate speech. And just like Justice Samuel Chase, it doesn't make any difference whether it's true or not. The fact that you said it is the crime. So the truth is a crime when people start bitching about hate speech. Cal?
Well, when you were saying that, you mentioned that hate speech or silencing someone else is a sign of a totalitarian or a tyrannical regime. And that's exactly what the Federalists did. So what does that tell you about the regime, aka the United States government? What does that tell you about that? that it was created by people with a totalitarian or an authoritarian or a tyrannical mindset setting up that sort of regime. So how does that make people in, you know, the American people free when they embrace the government that the totalitarians created? I can't reconcile the two in my own mind.
Well, Cal, are you familiar with a Supreme Court decision? And I hate to point to these evil bastards, the clowns in black gowns. But, you know, from time to time, just like any other blind squirrel, they find an acorn. So are you familiar with the decision Brandenburg versus Ohio?
No, I'm not. I might be, but maybe not under that name. But,
well,
yeah,
it's,
I'd love to hear it.
It's quite interesting, really. And if you read it, you would see that that the people today who try to restrict what you can hear by calling it hate speech are playing right into the very heart of a totalitarian form of government. And, you know, I can understand people trying to limit information from a child. I can understand that. But an adult, to tell an adult, you can't listen to this because you're not smart enough to comprehend it. Now, which made me think of a book by Thomas Sowell called Visions of the Anointed. And there are people in our society who feel like they are morally and intellectually superior to everyone else, and therefore, because they are, they should be allowed to determine what we can hear and what we can't hear. Now, in the case that I mentioned to you, the Brandenburg versus Ohio, the appellant, who was a Ku Klux Klan leader, was convicted under the Ohio criminal syndicalism statute for advocating the duty, necessity, or propriety of crime, sabotage, violence, or unlawful methods of terrorism as a means of accomplishing industrial or political reform, and for voluntarily assembling with any society, group, or assemblage of persons formed to teach or advocate the doctrines of criminal syndicalism. Neither the indictment nor the trial judge's instructions refine the statute's definition of the crime in terms of mere advocacy, not distinguished from incitement to imminent lawless action. Held by the Supreme Court, since the statute, by its words as applied, purports to punish mere advocacy and to forbid on pain of criminal punishment assembly with others merely to advocate the described type of action, it falls within the condemnation of the First and the 14th Amendments. Freedom of speech and press do not permit a state to forbid advocacy of the use of force or of law violation except where such advocacy is directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action, and is likely to incite or produce such action. So it's really kind of strange that your speech, you know, and one of the things that's always freaked me out, you want to talk about filtering speech so because the people are too damn dumb to figure it out if they actually heard the speech itself, was the Supreme Court's advocacy of, well, if we do that, you know, something has to be done to stop someone from yelling fire in a crowded auditorium. My God, is that not a filter on the people's intelligence to look around and see if there's a damn fire? I mean, the fact that someone could stand up and yell fire in a crowded auditorium shouldn't mean shit if the people have enough absolute intelligence to figure out whether there is one or not. Cal, your thoughts?
Well, that person who stands up and yells fire, if you know, if it results in, you know, like a stampede for the doors and people are injured, then that person who yelled fire should be held liable for what he caused. That's liberty of speech. That's that responsibility for what you say comes into play. You don't limit what he says, but he has to be held accountable for what he said if there are resulting damages to other people's rights from that speech. You know, if you can be seen that way. I mean, if somebody advocates, well, we should go off and do this and you know, cause this harm to these other people, and those people go off and cause harm to those other people, then those people who cause harm should be held accountable for causing harm or violating the rights of others. Again, it comes down to responsibility. And I think that's what people don't want to have, is to have responsibility. And they allow, I mean, people allow other people to deplatform or censor other people. The right is allowing it to happen because they don't want the responsibility to think for themselves. They don't want the responsibility of refuting what somebody else says if it's counter to their narrative. And well, that's Marxism, isn't it?
I certainly. Well, let's get to the bare bones of the thing. Why would you want to limit people you know from hearing something? What would be your purpose in that?
Because I would be afraid that they would think differently than me, or that they would follow a path that I don't think they should follow, even though I'm of the nature that you've got to follow your own path. It's just, I don't know, people wanting to control other people, which is antithetical to liberty. I don't understand how people don't understand that. That's so antithetical to liberty and freedom, to be controlled by other people. That's a master-slave relationship.
Well, let's throw in the factor of financial pursuits. What if someone makes their majority of their living by telling people lies, and then they, you know, here's something we could jump into right away. You know, if the Constitution really is a limit on the government, number one, we would have not had the Judicial Act of 1789. Now, this is an endless list, but I'm going to list a few. Number two, we would not have had an invasion of Pennsylvania by the federal government to put down the Whiskey Rebellion if the Constitution was followed. Number three, we would not have abortion today if the Constitution was followed. We would not have the Affordable Health Care Act if the Constitution was followed. If the Constitution was followed, Bill Clinton would have never been president of the United States, nor would Obama have ever been president of the United States. And then we would have not had several senators, including Ted Cruz and I was trying to think of the other, Marco Rubio. They are ineligible if we followed the Constitution. If we followed the Constitution, there would have never been a civil war. If we followed the Constitution, there would have never been, a Korean War, World War One, World War Two, Vietnam, the wars in the Middle East that we are currently involved in. Those would never have occurred if the Constitution actually limited government. Now, how the hell can someone go out there and preach to the masses that the Constitution is a limitation on government when all of the evidence points to the contrary? Now, what if someone was giving another person money to prevent the actual truth from being produced on any venue? Where would we be then, Cal?
It would be exactly where we are right now. That's basically what's happening. People are being paid to drive the narrative to silence any dissent.
Well, Cal, you know, we've read the source documents. So if you go back to Richard Henry Lee especially, and William Grayson, even in their presentation to the Virginia legislature, they said the Bill of Rights was no limitation on government. If the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was a limitation on government, we wouldn't have 2,000 federal gun control laws. The Constitution is no limitation on government, yet this woman says that if you don't believe that it is, you're a hater. What if you're a hater of the haters of hate speech? What does that make you?
I'm not sure. I don't hate the haters of hate speech. I just don't follow their narrative. You know, well, I mean, hating the person or hating what they say, I guess that would be two different things. And I guess you got to kind of separate it, you know, hate the sin, but love the sinner, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, to be told that, you know, to be told this is such a blatant falsehood to the reality that everybody's living in. Yet people accept it. And it just blows me away. I mean, you can look around. If the Constitution limited the government, then why is the government not limited?
Well, if the Constitution limited the government, we wouldn't have this pandemic. We wouldn't have these extremely high oil prices, because there is nothing in the Constitution that tells the President of the United States that they can close down the Keystone Pipeline. There is no provision in the Constitution for that. There is no provision for abortion in the Constitution. There is no provision for gun laws in the Constitution. There is no provision for affordable health care in the Constitution. I know I'm being redundant here, but when, if this Constitution is actually going to be a limit on government, when does it begin?
Never. It wasn't meant to be a limit. It was meant to appear as a limit, but the government can do whatever it feels is necessary and proper for the general welfare. Sorry, I'm getting away from the theory of the Constitution.
Cal, that's hate speech.
Well, if the truth is the truth.
Truth, what you're saying is hate speech. You can't say that. That's hate speech.
Well, it was pointed out on her website. That's what's going on. And she didn't have an argument against it. And so now she has that it's hate speech.
So if you have no argument against the truth, you just call it hate speech.
Yeah. You cut out the tongue.
Or if you have no argument against the truth, you call it a conspiracy theory. If you have no proof, you call people names. Isn't that wonderful? What a wonderful concept, Cal. That
so mature and adult, isn't it?
Yes, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's go back to Marcus Tullius Cicero. A people who are ignorant of their own history will be forever children. And if we're not watching a whole schoolyard of grammar school kids in this government today, I don't know what we're watching, Cal.
Well, once again, Bubis is intellectually crippled. They're in a permanent state of childhood, mentally.
Well, are they?
And they rely on others. They've gone beyond allowing others to relying on others to do this for them.
Well, now, wait a minute. Can't we take this back to the fact that this country is in the mess it's in because the majority of people have been deprived of the truth for at least a century?
Well, oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, so
deprived of the truth started way back at the start of the whole debates over the Constitution.
Yeah, I mean, well, we got to keep this secret for 50 years, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What does that tell you, people?
Well, what if today, let's just give a hypothetical. What if I was giving a presentation on a program and somebody said, oh, that's hate speech? Is that not depriving people of the truth, Cal?
That's an attempt to. That's an attempt to silence you. Yeah. That's an attempt to tell these people that they shouldn't listen to you, because they're not smart enough to accept or reject it for what you have to say for themselves.
Oh, you're just a bunch of dumbasses out there, and we will decide what you can hear and what you can't hear.
Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Hmm. That's kind of scary, Cal. But we have developed.
Well, if you accept it, then their premise is true. If you accept that they're not smart enough, or you embrace it, then their premise is true. You are not smart enough. If you accept that notion, then that you have made their premise true. Would that be an accurate assessment?
Yeah, and I've just figured it out, Cal, that I'm a hater. I hate the people who hate hate speech. Well, I shall go forthwith and discipline myself.
There you go. Lose a couple seconds of sleep before you go fall asleep.
Yeah, I'll probably toss and turn for at least 10, 15 seconds before I fall asleep, worried about the people who call what I say hate speech. Or people who call the truth hate speech. Anybody who is trying to tell you that the truth is hate speech is trying to hide something from you. Why do people hide the truth, Cal?
To further their own agendas.
Oh.
Because it's evil. A lie is evil and the truth is righteous, but people try to hide the truth, which is righteousness, and embrace evil. I mean, just to put it in that context. Would that be an accurate assessment as well?
Yes, very accurate. But what would you call a person who takes money to keep the truth away from people?
A whore?
Oh. Well, at least a political whore, right?
A political whore, yeah. Well, yeah, okay. Different kinds of whores, but yeah. They've sold the truth. I mean, they probably know the truth, but they've sold their soul for money. They've taken their 30 shekels of silver. Basically.
Yeah. Well, somebody who gets paid to do something they know is morally wrong is in fact a prostitute. You can prostitute the truth. You can prostitute your body. There's very little difference. Would you agree?
Totally.
Well, we've jumped all over this horse. What would you like to discuss in hour two, Cal?
I'm game for anything you want to go with, Mike.
Why don't we talk about Patrick Henry? And there's the music, folks. We'll be back with you on the flip side.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for free association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Ravenstar's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener-supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud. We wouldn't want anybody thinking if they were thinking hateful thoughts. But anyway, jumping ship and going to our subject for hour two, Cal. My question is this. Can anyone support the principles of Patrick Henry and the principles of the Constitution at the same time?
The principles or theory of Constitution or the actual U.S. Constitution? I think there needs to be a differentiation made between the two.
Well, how would you make it?
Well, people have it. Well, a constitution in theory is, you know, a delegation of powers and a limit upon government. This constitution doesn't meet that theory. To say so is a lie. This is what I call the myth about the constitution. And the Federalists sold that lie to the people. And they still believe it today. I do not understand how people relate the constitution with their liberty. I don't understand that at all. But they do. It's like Chris Van Hall said, you know, if you hate the Constitution, you must hate liberty. Well, that was just the exact opposite for Patrick Henry. How can a document created by man be equated to the liberty endowed to all mankind by their creator? How do you relate those two?
Well,
I don't understand that.
Wasn't it very telling, Cal? Wasn't it very telling that at the Constitutional Convention, a Bill of Rights was unanimously defeated? Does that not tell you what those people were there for?
Well, no. Well, yeah, if you actually follow the truth and follow the source documents and follow true history, it tells a lot. But people don't want to follow the truth. They don't. They want to follow the comfortable lie. They want other people to tell them what to think. Because, you know, coming up with your own opinion and thinking and researching and accepting the truth, it's not easy, especially if, you know, everything you believe you find out is pretty much a lie. It's kind of shattering, and most people don't want to face that. But it's the truth that will set you free. There's a lot of wisdom in that phrase.
Well, Cal, if anyone is listening who tunes into my Telegram channels, both Rebel Madman, Constitutional Fraud, and Teach Me True History, if you go to either of those channels right now, you will find a new mime that has been posted there, and it's very simple. It says, when the truth is defined as hate speech, freedom and liberty are lost. Actually, it says freedom is lost, but both are lost when the truth becomes hate speech. But we look at Patrick Henry again, and we think the man who said he preferred death to the loss of liberty. And this is a man who spoke passionately and often at the Virginia Ratification Convention, and no one in the history of this country opposed the Constitution more than Patrick Henry. He was also cited by his fellow founders as the most devout Christian among them. Why is it, Cal, that people today, especially on the right, those who call themselves Christian conservatives, can embrace a Constitution that the most devout Christian among the founders fought hammer and nail to defeat?
I would say because they don't embrace the true message and teachings from Christ. The religions, most of the Christian religions are 501c3 corporations, which makes them just basically entities of the government, which is corrupt. So if they're entities of a corrupt government, wouldn't that also entail that they are also corrupt? I'm just putting dots together here, daring to think out loud.
Well,
for
that,
people to think and consider for themselves. Reject what I'm saying or accept it and make up your own mind.
So you are saying, in essence, that the churches of America have sold out to the government? Would that be a fair statement?
They have accepted their 30 shekels of silver, yes.
Wow. Okay. So, and therefore, they are not going to say anything in opposition to what the government tells them that they are allowed to say. Did they not say, do they not now, or did they not 2 years ago close down because the government told them to? If the government can tell a church that they can't operate, who is God?
Government. Government. I don't see how people don't see that, but they don't.
And if the government can tell churches to shut down and they willfully do so, who is their God? The people who accepted it. Who, and what is, help me out again. What was that, what is that first commandment again, Cal?
Thou shalt have.
You still there, buddy?
Hold on, Mike. I got bumped.
Oh, okay. Is that an operator error?
Yes, we do.
That's an operator error, I assume?
Oh, shit.
Well, I can hear you.
Oh, if you can hear me. I can hear you, but not through my headset.
Oh.
I bumped on my phone.
Oh, well, you know, that's good old communications. They bumped you. They bumped me last week, so, you know, ain't freedom.
Can you still hear me?
Yes, sir. Ain't freedom wonderful?
I probably got to do it a little different, but if we're still on, we'll still keep going.
Oh, we're good. We can
Let's
do it this way. Okay. Go ahead. You know, I think I'm trying to find it right now, but I remember this crazy guy who wrote an article, I mean, maybe 15 years ago.
Is that that crazy rebel madman guy?
Yeah, I think it's him. And he wrote a crazy article called The Black Regiment is Missing. Have you read that article?
Yes, I have. And it's it points out what's going on. But, yeah, if you want to read it, I think the listener should hear it again.
Well, let me see if I can find it. That might be the first one out of the box here. I will bore the people. I hope this doesn't classify as hate speech. But here I will attempt to see if I can bring this up. Isn't that wonderful? I've got a bunch of ads on my program.
They're messing with the second hour big time, aren't they?
Oh, big time. I can't even see my own article because it is blocked by ads. And, of course, if I, get the right thing going here, I can buy this or I can buy something or I can buy this, that, or the other, and I can immediately, you know, oh, my goodness. This is getting more and more. The censorship is getting more and more fun. Well, at least they didn't call me a hater. But so here is what I wrote. And I said, if once the people become inattentive to the public affairs, you and I and Congress and assemblies, judges and governors shall all become wolves. It seems to be the law of our general nature, in spite of individual exceptions and experiences, declares that man is the only animal which devours his own kind. Unquote. Old King George III didn't do a lot of worrying about the rabble in the colonies that were making so much noise and causing trouble with throwing tea in the Boston Harbor. It'd be easy to handle. He would make life unbearable by granting immunity from prosecution to his soldiers there. What do we call it here? Implied immunity in America? And old King George ain't dead. Then he would blockade the port and starve the upstarts into submission. Oh, my goodness, is that what's happening now? Have our ports been blocked? Oh, all these atrocities committed against the rabble came to be known as the Intolerable Acts. Lost in our revisionist history is the identity of the group of patriots who inspired the colonists. They would be none other than the ministers or the preachers of the colonies. Not even the writings of those such as Thomas Paine did as much to motivate the colonists in their pursuit of liberty as did those who espoused resistance and civil disobedience from the pulpit. These brave souls recognized unjust rules and despotic rulers, and they preached against them. Ain't happening today, buddy, I promise you. King George, who had prompted many of these men of God to leave England by demanding all of their professions submit to licensing by the crown, which is exactly what we have under 501(c), came to fear this group he referred to as the Black Regiment. King George called them this because of the black robes that they wore when preaching. Without these men of God, it is very possible there never would have been a Declaration of Independence. These ministers were very much opposed to the divine right of kings. Often heard from the pulpit was the cry, "Restore the crown rights of King Jesus." These robed clerics became the number one source of recruits for what would become the Continental Army. Many of them single-handedly raised many companies of recruits, and more often than not were requested by those recruits to be the commanders of their companies. Those who did not join the soldiers wrote many impassioned pamphlets, insisting on liberty and freedom. These pamphlets were distributed among the troops and kept the morale of the soldiers high. General Washington often turned to this black regiment for help. He asked Lutheran pastor John Peter Gabriel Muhlenberg of Woodstock, Virginia, to raise a regiment of volunteers. Muhlenberg, incensed at the actions of the British at Lexington, Bunker, and Breed's Hill, consented. That Sunday, Muhlenberg delivered his sermon from Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1 through 8. In conclusion, the Reverend Muhlenberg said, "The Bible tells us there is a time for all things, and there is a time to preach and a time to pray. But the time for me to preach has passed away, and there is a time to fight, and that time has come now. Now is the time to fight. Call for recruits. Sound the drums." Unquote. With that, Muhlenberg tore away his robe, and underneath was the uniform of a Virginia colonel. He pulled his musket from behind the pulpit, put on his three-cornered colonel's hat, and quoted from Nehemiah 4:14. And I quote, "Be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses." Unquote. As Muhlenberg and his group of volunteers moved towards Charleston, South Carolina, he was able to recruit hundreds more to the cause of freedom. His uncommon courage on the field of battle was an inspiration to many, and he came to be known as the Reverend Major General Muhlenberg. Where are the members of the Black Regiment today as a despotic, tyrannical government seeks to enslave us all, send our children to their deaths as they build their world empire, and tax and spend us into national poverty? They should surely be listed as missing in action. Could it be our churches and their leaders have sold out to the god called the state? How many of our churches today have succumbed to the government enticement to transfer control of the church from God to the government by becoming tax-exempt entities? Again, we beg from government that which God has already provided. Retired senior IRS agent Steve Nestor said, and I quote, "The IRS's position has always been that churches are automatically tax-exempt and tax deductible without having to apply for 501c3 recognition. Nevertheless, many thousands of churches have submitted Form 1023 to the IRS for the privilege of being something the IRS already acknowledged that they were. When a church becomes a tax-exempt corporation, they submit the church to the laws of government. Matthew 6:24 states, and I quote, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Unquote. Government can only tax that over which it has dominion and control. If the government can tax the church, then there is absolutely no separation of church and state. Thomas Jefferson said, "The Constitution has not placed our religious rights under the power of any public functionary." Unquote. The very reason the Black Regiment is missing in our present-day world is the ministers, preachers fear the loss of this tax-exempt status if they speak out against the government. There is no cry from the pulpit to stop the usurpations of the government as it steadily moves to enslave us all. There is very little but total support for unconstitutional wars that kill hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians and thousands of our own soldiers. There is no plea to stop the usurpation of our God-given rights to liberty and freedom. Is this not the lack of a separation of church and state we should be concerned with? Now, Michael Chitwood of the firm Chitwood & Chitwood, an accounting firm that specializes in tax issues for churches, recently said in a seminar. Now, you got to remember, this article is about 20 years old. Recently said in a seminar, and I quote, "You must be ordained by the IRS as well as ordained by God," unquote. Think about that, people. Continuing with his lecture, Mr. Chitwood said, "Pastor, if you do not get your house in order, get ready. You're going to have a jailhouse ministry," unquote. Then he continues on later. "There is not a shadow of right in the general government to intermeddle with religion." No, this is a James Madison quote. I'm sorry. "There is not a shadow of a right in the general government to intermeddle with religion. This subject is, for the honor of America, perfectly free and unshackled. The government has no jurisdiction over it." Well, and then I went on to state, "One of my favorite ministers from the state of Mississippi has said from the pulpit, and I quote, 'Over 90% of the churches in America are nothing but social clubs for losers. Perhaps this affiliation with and fear of the state is the reason why.' His sermons often combine scripture with quotes from Patrick Henry and Thomas Jefferson, among others." Now, to go back to scripture, Chapter 50, verse 6, and I quote, "My people hath been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to go astray. They have turned them away on the mountains. They have gone from mountain to hill. They have forgotten their resting place." Is it time for the Black Regiment to assume their duties to the church and forget and forever sever their relationship with the government? Well, they'll have to quit flying those Ukraine flags, won't they? So here is a quote as I end this article. I end it with a quote from the 16th American Jurisprudence, second edition of Constitutional Law 466. Listen carefully. "The First Amendment's prohibition of laws respecting an establishment of religion has been described as resting on the belief that a union of government and religion tends to destroy government and to degrade religion, and upon an awareness of the historical fact that governmentally established religions and religious persecutions go hand in hand," unquote. Your thoughts, Cal? That's the end of that old article.
Well, I would say the relationship between government and religion is used to control people and destroy the people's liberty. That's what I see happening. Government's using religions to destroy.
Have you ever seen? Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Have you ever seen a Christian conservative that didn't support an unconstitutional war?
No. Or the war on drugs, including that one.
Yeah. and they have been standing around and bitching for 40 some years now about abortion. What have those wonderful Christian conservatives done about it?
Just use it as a political football to control the people. That's all it is. It's just false words to control the people. And they're just a bunch of Joel Osteens, I guess.
But wait a minute, Cal. All of these wonderful preachers tell us how wonderful the government is and how we should submit to the government. Are you trying to tell me they're wrong?
I get a conflicting, confusing message. I thought you were supposed to submit to God, not the government. I mean, unless government is your God. I'm confused. Which one do you choose? Which master?
Well, when all these churches closed their doors because of the fake pandemic, were they honoring, which God were they honoring again? I have to ask that question. I know I'm being redundant, but help me out with this. Who are they honoring when they shut their doors to their parishioners and said, "No, you can't come down here because the government said you can't"?
They were submitting to mammon. Is there any other way to put it or look at it?
Well, Cal, what's the next jump? What would the government need to do? They've already established a precedent. What if the government were to say, "Hey, all of you wonderful Christian conservatives out there, you can't go to church no more because we have found out that there is a virus in every church in America, and if you go in there, you're going to die.
Well, I don't see the government doing that because the churches have worked so well in furthering the government's agenda. If they now, if they started being like the Black Regiment, they might do that. If churches started, you know, preaching freedom and liberty once again, you know, started teaching what Christ taught, which was, you know, free will or liberty, yeah, they'd probably do that. They would, you know, shut down, they would call it hate speech and start shutting down churches. They would be called the Black Regiment, just like King George called them.
It'd be that old Black Regiment that supports hate speech. Now, wouldn't that be terrible?
Well, you know, the understanding of liberty and the drive for the cause of liberty, back in the in those days, came from the pubs and the pulpit, a lot from the pulpit. You read an example of it. I mean, were most of the Minutemen all members of the same congregation?
Yeah, on many occasions they were.
Yeah, I mean, and where did they get this ideology to go against the government and stand up for the rights of the people? Where did this idea, where did this notion come from? Who planted that seed in their head?
Well, look at that, look at those speeches from that article that I wrote about the Black Regiment is missing. Let's look at what the Reverend Peter Muhlenberg had to say in his sermon. What if today, Cal, we had thousands of churches in this country where the pastor stood up and had the absolutely intestinal fortitude to say, hey, this is a fraud. We can no longer endure this fraud that's being perpetrated on the people because they're about to starve us to death. They're about to place fuel to the point that no one can afford it. And they have kept us in our homes and destroyed businesses with a lie about a pandemic. And it's time we did something about it. Now, does that not go back to Jeremiah 50, verse 6?
Yeah, exactly. I don't see the pastors doing it. I mean, if they did, you'd see it. You would see a change in this country. If they did, if they started preaching, you know, the actual words of Christ, actual liberty, actual freedom, you might see a change in this country. You'd see a change in the hearts and minds of the people, which is what the powers that be understand, which is why they control the churches. They know how to manipulate and control the hearts and minds of the people. Because that's what this whole battle of liberty and tyranny or righteousness or good versus evil is all about.
Well, and, Cal, can you imagine
and it's for
this?
Each individual to decide, which goes about when they label, you know, it hate speech and they try to decide for other people, they're taking away other people's liberty. And that's what evil is. It's the destruction of liberty. The destruction
Cal,
of free will.
Can you imagine a group of ministers who all happen to die the same day getting to the pearly gates and standing there and St. Peter says, oh, guys, I'm sorry. You can't come in. You closed down God's centers of worship because the government told you to.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You think there might be a weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth?
Most definitely.
But God, I couldn't do what you told me to because the government said I couldn't. You ain't going to hold me responsible for that, are you?
Well, Mike, you mentioned that responsible word again. You keep talking about responsibilities and truth. I don't know. Are people willing to accept truth and responsibility?
No.
Or do they want to forever be children? Be misled by lies and exist in this mess that everyone exists in today?
They prefer the comfortable lie. We all know that.
And they defend the shills that keep telling them the comfortable lie.
Yeah.
They tell them the comfortable lie.
Yeah,
they're following the prostitutes.
And if you
of their liberty.
And if you question them, the ones who are telling you the comfortable lie, if you question them, it's hate speech.
Yeah, to silence them. Yeah.
Hmm. I continue to be confused here, Cal. You're going to have to help me out. How are we going to do this? You know, the churches have been taken over by the government. That's pretty plain. And, you know, where is going to be any resistance to this full-fledged assault on America?
Well, there's a few voices of resistance out there. Yours, mine, and others are among the few. But
yeah, but Cal, yeah. There are people who are saying what we teach is hate speech.
Well, yeah, they're trying to silence you, and I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't try to deplatform you for doing it.
Oh well, then it'll just have to be like that because I ain't giving up.
No, no, exactly. Well, that's because you're a man of principle. you would prefer liberty over death, I would dare say, and you will follow that truth no matter where that truth takes you.
Yeah, well, even Cody made a comment about and that's one of the things I think about George Carlin. George Carlin said, "Watch these Christians, man. They are all for life for their children until they get to be 18. Then they sacrifice them to the government in war." Ain't that just wonderful?
They're told it's for freedom. I mean, they've been shipping soldiers off overseas for how many years? Is there more or less freedom since they've been doing that way back since World War II? Or even during World War II?
How many people marching around with a copy of the Constitution in their pocket have sent their kids off to die in unconstitutional wars?
Well, probably almost all of them, because they're told that's the patriotic thing to do.
Oh, but
they've
Cal
accepted that false notion.
They're
they
supporting
have
the troops.
Mythologies. They're living a myth.
But they're supporting the troops, Cal.
Well, they're told freedom isn't free. And somehow that means that innocent people on the other side of the planet have to die in order for me to be free. And I just don't understand how that works.
Well, if we run off and kill people we don't know because the government said so, we can come home and people will thank us for doing so and tell us we are heroes.
Yeah, I used to subscribe to that until the truth and reason and thought processes shook me out of that mythological thinking. It just didn't make sense. I mean, you're told this, and how long does it, I mean, people are told to vote, and, you know, voting makes everything better. It, people who are older, you know, I mean, you voted all your life. Is things better or worse from all this voting you've done? I mean.
What'd you do? Phone hurt yourself?
No. What, you can't hear me now?
I'm just saying.
Oh, I'm talking like I bumped my head. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I've been dropped on my head. Well, I did spend the day in the sun yesterday, so I still might be a little delusional.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe you fell and hurt yourself, and because of that, you had decided that hate speech is the way to go, baby.
Yeah, well, what they label as hate speech is the way to go. I've actually decided the truth is, but that's hate speech, I guess, according to the narrative, and people accept and embrace and further that narrative, and it just. It's madness.
Well, here, Jennifer asked a very good question, Cal. If the pastors today stood up and said what Muhlenberg said back in the Revolutionary era, how many members of the congregation would turn on their preacher?
Probably most of them.
Oh, because their preacher would have been involved in hate speech.
Yes. Well, wasn't that why Christ was crucified? Because he was doing hate speech against the Jewish guys in charge?
Oh, no, don't say that, Cal. Shh.
Oh, sorry.
Be careful.
Like I said, I don't have any sacred cows other than the pursuit of rightful liberty. So I look at things differently than most. I don't view that as blasphemous. I just view it as looking at what actually happened.
Well, you know, maybe all Americans, when they meet a veteran and they say, thank you for your service, they should say, thank you for your service to the international banking cabal.
Yes, true. Thank you for being a mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And it's that international banking cabal that's seeking to enslave everybody.
No, tell me it ain't so. Oh, that's hate speech.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, that's... They're the ones that have the money to pay for the narrative, and they have no problem paying for it. Yep.
Well, you just have to be careful, Cal. I mean, you know, if you don't mess around, stumble over the truth here, because you know, we'll have to call that hate speech.
We have to recapture the glory that was Rome.
Mm. Absolutely. You know, the American Empire. And who was the first person in your historical knowledge to ever mention the American Empire, Cal?
Alexander Hamilton.
Oh, no. Please tell me it ain't so.
And he was an agent for who?
Oh, he was an agent for the international bankers.
Yeah.
Oh, and then in August, a Jewish author claimed Alexander Hamilton was, in fact, a Jew. Uh-oh. Hate speech. Sorry.
Hate speech. Anti-Semitism again.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
No.
Semitism
actually means anybody who spoke an Arabic dialect.
Oh, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea culpa.
Would be Semites as well. So, in actuality, the greatest anti-Semites is the nation of Israel in their persecution against the Palestinians.
You know, Cal, the truth, you know, wouldn't be so bad if it wasn't so damn uncomfortable.
Well, it was so counter to the narrative. Things are so 180 degrees out of phase. Just like that Sirenist of the Constitution said that if you hate the Constitution, you must hate liberty. And that's so 180 degrees wrong. I don't understand. If you love liberty, you don't like the Constitution because the Constitution is destructive to the people's liberty. I mean, it's created this government that is usurping all of the people's liberty. I don't understand how people can't connect those dots. It's not really a hard, you know, line to draw.
Well, the Constitution guarantees that ineligible people can be president. It guarantees that you can kill your unborn child. It guarantees that you can go to war against people just because the government told you they'd be bad. It guarantees, oh, man, this Constitution guarantees that you can be taxed as much as they want at any time they want for any amount they want from any source you might have. That's what the Constitution guarantees.
Well, yeah, it does, but the parchment's worshippers will argue that point, even though it plainly says that. I mean, they'll say, no, there is no direct taxation. Then why did the Federalists and Anti-Federalists debate it? If it didn't say that, then why did they debate that question?
Well, Cal, I think it was last week I had a guy on Jim's show come on and tell me that the Constitution did not provide for a standing army.
Yeah, I heard that. This is what I'm saying. People have accepted the mythology surrounding the Constitution, and they preach the mythology, and they're living a myth. They're living a lie. And as long as you live a lie, things are going to be messed up the way they are. That's just how it works. That's how the laws of nature work.
Wow. So, what do you think, Cal?
I thought of something, and one of the disadvantages that you and I have, you know, in spreading truth and, you know, historical truths and opinions and stuff like this, is you and I are not trying to force or use any power or jurisdiction over anyone to force them to accept what you and I are saying. We leave it up to each person. You know, we try to use reason and logic to convince, to sway the hearts and minds of the people to where the others have no problem using the powers of government or coercion to force their opinions upon others. And that's a huge disadvantage, so to speak, in the cause of liberty. But to do anything else, you know, to force an opinion upon someone else would be antithetical to the cause of liberty. So, yeah, we have a huge uphill battle, admittedly so.
Well, Cal, here's a constitutional question for you. I'm going to be the quizzer here, so get ready to be quizzed. What was the first act of the first Congress under the Constitution of 1787?
I'm going to hazard a guess that it was the Judiciary Act.
Oh, you would be exactly honest. And among the letters of the founders, they said they had to get that Judiciary Act done to complete what they had begun in the Constitutional Convention. We had to complete.
Yeah, because the Constitution says that the judiciary was supreme. No longer is God supreme. The judiciary, which is an entity of the government, is supreme.
Well, and then it says, but Cal, the Judiciary Act of 1789, the very act of the very first Congress, was unconstitutional because they amended, and they admit they amended Article 3. But Article 5 stipulates that to be an amendment, it must be submitted to the states for ratification, and 3/4 of the states must ratify it. The Judiciary Act of 1789 was never submitted to the people. And the Article 3 of the Constitution provides that judicial power over the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and such inferior courts as Congress sees fit to establish. Article 3 established neither how many justices could sit on the Supreme Court nor the structure of any federal courts. The Judiciary Act of 1789 amended Article 3 by providing that the Supreme Court of the United States shall consist of a Chief Justice and the 5 Associate Justices. The Act also created federal district courts and a circuit court, which could hear appeals from the district courts and would become the U.S. Court of Appeals. Under this new act, the district courts had jurisdiction over serious federal crimes, civil cases over $500 involving diversity jurisdiction, ooh, how sweet, or the United States as a party, and admiralty cases. That is, the Judiciary Act of 1789 did not grant district courts federal question jurisdiction over which they currently have jurisdiction. The Judiciary Act also created the office of the U.S. Attorney General, so the Attorney General of the United States is unconstitutional. The Constitution didn't protect us from that. And U.S. attorneys, which are plentiful, was provided by the Judiciary Act. That all of these U.S. attorneys are unconstitutional. And the United States Marshals are unconstitutional because they weren't provided for in the Constitution.
The Constitution is a document of implied powers.
Well, it might be.
According to Madison himself.
Yes, of course he said that. So it says we have all the powers we want, whether you like them or not, right?
Yeah, which is why Richard Henry Lee said that the Bill of Rights was so weak that, you know, the powers of the Constitution could render any of them nugatory. Or null and void, because delegated to the government, the implied powers to the implied delegated powers are still there.
So in effect, the government can do any damn thing it wants to, and the Constitution is absolutely no limitation on that. It actually provides for it, right?
Exactly.
Uh oh.
There's 3 few and defined powers that give the government all that power. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, and Article 6, Clause 2.
Uh-oh, we hate speech.
Well, yeah, well, because you and I hate liberty.
I gotta censor you right here, Cal, because you're hating on this stuff.
Yeah, I know. I'm just pointing out, I'm just calling it as I see it. Y'all can think what you want to do, but, you know, go read it for yourself. Read the Constitution for yourself. Forget what they taught you in, you know, the government gulags in the so-called civics class, or what the right-wing media has told you, or, you know, the prostitutes of people's liberty are telling you about the Constitution, and read it for yourself with that perspective. The Constitution was put together by, you know, those crafty lawyers who had no intention of securing the people's liberty. It was about control, money, power, and control for the aristocracy or the wealthy and well-born of that era, and to continue on for their posterity.
Oh, wow.
Well, isn't that what's happened?
Well, have these people who say that we're involved in hate speech, Cal, have they ever read any of these letters, like from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry?
I doubt it. And, you know, and until you do, I mean, you're going to believe the myths you're told. But if somebody gives you a different perspective or a different viewpoint on how to look at something, and you don't at least look at it that way, and then accept or reject it on your own, have you done yourself a disservice? But most people won't even think at it.
Well, Cal, there's one sentence in one of those letters from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry that should swat people right square in the ass, but it doesn't. And I'm sure by repeating this sentence, I'm going to be involved in some form of hate speech. But Richard Henry Lee said to Patrick Henry, now think about this very short sentence. Your observation is perfectly just, that any right without the power to protect it is of little avail.
Where in the Bill of Rights is the power to enforce those rights?
There is none.
Where in the Constitution is the power of the people to enforce and secure their rights?
There is none.
Oh, they've given you the privilege of peacefully redressing them. Peacefully.
Well, listen to this.
In other words, you can submit your, you know, you can, you know, beg as a servant or as a slave for more privileges. But that's basically what it says. Well, we'll allow you that privilege to beg us for more privileges.
So Richard Henry Lee continues. He said, yet, as small as it is, how wonderfully scrupulous have they been in stating our rights. The English language has been carefully culled to find words feeble in their nature or totally doubtful in their meaning. Did he not nail it?
Well, exactly. How can you not hear those words or read those words and not see exactly what's going on? I don't get it.
It is. It's just
it's magic.
Absolutely, it's unreal.
If people want to believe that comfortable lie. They want the myth because it's easier.
It's easy to say, well,
the Constitution's going to do this because they're expecting the Constitution and not them to do it. They're placing their responsibility to words on paper. I don't get it. I mean, shouldn't the Constitution or those principles of what, you know, people say the Constitution is and securing rights, shouldn't that be held in the hearts and minds of each individual as part of their own being, of their own Constitution? I mean, they speak of the Constitution, you know, before the written Constitution of the United States, the British Constitution, Well, there was no actual written British Constitution. It's what the people held in their hearts and minds.
Well, let's look at this, Cal. Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson, the only two anti-federalists in the first U.S. Senate, which means they were outnumbered 20-2 in whatever they tried to do, they did make a presentation to the Virginia Speaker of the House of Delegates on September 28th of 1789. And they said the following, and I quote, "We have now the honor of enclosing the propositions of amendments to the Constitution of the United States that has been finally agreed upon by Congress. We can assure you, sir, that nothing on our part has been omitted to procure the success of those radical amendments proposed by the convention and approved by the legislature of our country," meaning Virginia, "such as our constituent. We shall always deem it our duty with respect and reverence to obey our constituents. The Journal of the Senate herewith transmitted will at once show how exact and how unfortunate we have been in this business. It is impossible for us not to see the necessary tendency to consolidate the country into an empire in the natural operation of this Constitution, if it is no further amended than now proposed. And it is equally impossible for us not to be apprehensive for the liberties of the people when we know no instance in the records of history that show a people ruled in freedom when subject to an undivided government and inhabiting a territory so extensive as that of the United States." 13 states back then, folks. "And when, as it seems to us, the nature of man and things have been joined to prevent it. The impracticability in such case of carrying representation sufficiently near to the people for procuring their confidence and consequent obedience compels a resort to fear resulting from great force and excessive power in this government. Confederated republics, when the federal hand is not possessed of absorbing power, may permit the existence of freedom whilst it preserves the Union's strength and safety. Such amendments, therefore, as may secure against the annihilation of the state government, we devoutly wished to see adopted. If a persevering application to Congress from the states that have desired such amendments should fail of its object, we are disposed to think, reasoning from causes to effects, that unless a dangerous apathy should invade the public mind, that it will not be many years before a constitutional number of legislatures will be found to demand a convention for that purpose. And it ain't occurred in 230 some years. But they told the legislature of Virginia that you might as well have not had any amendments at all. These will do more harm than good. But yet, that woman says that if you don't believe what she says, that the limits are there, if you don't believe it, it's hate speech. Come on, Cal, help me out of my hate speech doldrums here, would you please?
I wish these people that say that would point to where the government has been limited. Not to where they say the Constitution limits the government, but to where the government has actually been limited. I mean, when the political will is there, the government will do whatever the government wants to do. I mean, the states were meant to be used as subordinately useful idiots. And that was manifested in, well, the federal government kind of said you had to wear a mask, but it was the state governments that enforced it.
Yep.
I mean, is that not mean that the states were useful idiots, or that the states are actually vassals of the federal government? Yet the same people who preach about the Constitution say that the states are superior to the federal government, that the states created the federal government.
Oh, yeah. Which isn't even true. Of course the states are superior. Of course they are. That's why the states overrule the federal government every couple of weeks, Cal.
Yeah. Well, That's why when the states wanted not to play this game anymore, weren't allowed to not play this game anymore.
Yeah, okay, you either play the game or we kill you. That's the rule there. All right, let me jump in.
Because you're in charge.
Yeah, you're in charge, but we're going to kill you if you try to exert that authority. So let me jump here to my three Telegram channels, Rebel Madman, Constitutional Fraud, and Teach Me True History, where we have, and you have joined us, Cal, appreciate that, a live class on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. Any of those people who are on Telegram who would like to be a part of that class, please get in touch with us and let us know. We'd love to have you there. Also, on tomorrow, I will be on with our brother Dave Scorpio, and we will be discussing current issues and perhaps George Washington's will. And then on Sunday afternoon, it will be the old retired commercial airline pilot who tried and tried and tried on a simulator but couldn't hit the World Trade Centers. And he only had a few thousand hours driving experience of those aircraft, and he couldn't do it on a simulator. So I'm sure that some Arab with 3 weeks of training in Arizona can hit it every time. But twice. Anyway, sir.
Two different times, two different towers. Yep.
Yeah, well, you know, but yeah, they were good, boy. All you had, whatever that training school was in California or Arizona, everybody should go to that and forget being trained as a commercial airline pilot. But anyway.
And ground level on the Pentagon.
Yes, and just come right in across the ground and make that strike, and you couldn't land a paper cup, whatever you call it. So anyway, we are about to run out of time, folks, and that program is on Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, and this Sunday should be a doozy. Hope you folks will be there to join us. So, Cal, thanks for joining with us. You want to talk us out to the music, buddy?
Well, all I can say is people, the truth, it's been said that the truth will set you free. You look around, and if you compare what people tell you with the realities, the actual realities going on, it should be fairly obvious that the truth is not out there, that you're not following the truth. And, one place to find the truth is to follow this. I mean, this isn't my participating business thing, and this is actually sharing the source documents, stuff you weren't taught about in school, stuff that's been intentionally hidden and censored. And you'll find that stuff, and then you can make up your own mind. Don't let other people make up your mind for you.
Ah, thanks, Cal. And, folks, there's the music. But if you want a replay of the program, go to my Telegram channels. It should be posted post-haste. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy a great weekend, and we shall see you tomorrow with Operation Scorpio. Thanks, Cal.
Thanks, Michael.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Zero five one seven three. We talk about decentralization.